You're listening to Episode 7 of The Gearheart. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. Renee White is the voice of our female characters. If you haven't had a chance yet, or you're listening on iTunes or Podiobooks.com, you can stop by The Gearheart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com, or you can email me directly at alex@thegearheart.com. Don't forget that you can also follow us on Twitter, username TheGearheart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of the Gearheart. Last time on the Gearheart, Jonathan is sent to the docks to watch for potential threats to Isabel as three assassins observe from a nearby pier. It becomes obvious that these are not simple killers, and Jonathan and the others are in more danger than ever before. Will they be all right? Find out on the Gearheart. Isabel's grip, as she threw her arms around Jonathan, was far tighter than usual, to the point that he felt compelled to make her loosen her hold upon him. As his arm touched hers to pull away, her embrace intensified. Then, as quickly as she had enveloped him, she released. Isabel's eyes were slightly bloodshot, and her dress was wrinkled upon every thread. It was as though she had only just found out about her egress from the ship that afternoon, and had hastily tried to press the garment between two suitcases. She'd made no attempt at makeup, and her hair was slightly askew, but her natural beauty was still evident. She embraced Keegan ever so briefly before speaking the words,
"He killed the liaison."
Her voice creaked, and she coughed quietly. "It's all right for now, Izzy. We can talk about that later," Jonathan spoke plainly. Isabel's expression rang of quiet gratitude. She seemed to relax somewhat.
"Is everyone else all right?"
"Everyone is fine, though we should be pressing on, Agent Carragher," said Keegan.
"Where are the others?"
"Darren and Augustus are around. We're going to escort you out of here, then they'll follow," Keegan replied. "Cog is back at the house."
"I understand."
Jonathan and Keegan moved forward and gathered Isabel's things, strapping them onto a hand truck. Jonathan smiled encouragingly at her, but her smile in response was slightly distracted. She couldn't stop surveying the docks, inspecting every face of every bystander that passed. The car is this way, Isabel." Jonathan bent down and grabbed the last small bag, lashing it onto the large trunk. As he stood up, something dark swooped by Jonathan's head. A black shape, easily the size of a man, flying directly along the shoreline to the south. The breeze from its wake passed over Jonathan's face, forming tiny snowflakes in the air, and leaving the scent of freshly turned earth. Reflexively, his head snapped back, and his hand released the top of the cart, and Isabel's luggage clattered onto his leg. He yelped in surprise, as hot pain seared across his ankle, and he stumbled backwards onto his rump. When Jonathan craned his neck to follow the blurry object, it was gone. The only point of interest was the distant fishing pier, jutting out to the south.
"Jonathan, are you okay?"
Isabel rushed to his side to help him up, but he wasn't paying attention.
Did you see that?"
said Jonathan, brushing his companion to one side.
"See what?"
Keegan's mouth was stern and controlled as he spoke. He didn't look at Jonathan, but calmly surveyed his surroundings.
"That thing, there was a thing that just flew overhead. You didn't see it?"
Jonathan pointed in the direction of the pier, but he couldn't find what he was talking about. The seagulls cried out in the chill evening air as they retreated through the purple sky to their roosts. The docks were slowly emptying of workers, and some of the ships had already turned on their lights. The vendors had mostly closed up shop, and buses had arrived to take many of the workers home for the evening. Jonathan's heavy breaths hung in the air, catching the last rays of the setting sun.
"I don't see anything, Jonathan," What did you see?
Keegan asked. Jonathan grimaced. He had never been too good at description.
It was like a piece of cloth flew by my head. Just shot by, going that way, and then disappeared.
Isabel's eyes widened.
Are you sure it wasn't a bird?
No, I mean, it could have been.
Jonathan felt like he wanted to panic. He knew he probably looked like he was frightened, but he tried to stifle it.
You don't know what it was?
I think someone's dead on the fishing pier, Jonathan breathed. Maybe a couple of people.
It just slipped out. Just like that, Jonathan knew exactly what he saw. A warning. He knew that they needed to leave right then, before the docks were empty, or that blackness would come for them as well. As Jonathan hobbled to his feet, his ankle shot a complaint up his leg and he started to fall. Isabel and Keegan seized his arms before he knew what was happening and began to walk.
What about the luggage? Jonathan asked.
Keegan held up his right hand in a fist, and Darren appeared from the nearest alley. He grabbed the hand truck without asking any questions and piled the fallen trunks and bags onto it. The others began to walk towards their car in a brisk pace. The doctor caught up to the group in a matter of moments, walking as though nothing was wrong.
Hey, Isabel, said Darren, a strange smile crossing his face.
Hey, Darren.
Never a dull moment, then? Darren asked.
Not one, Jonathan grunted before Isabel could answer. They staggered past a few curious workers, trying to make good time out of the harbor, but not appear as though panicked. Keegan nodded his head at Isabel, indicating that she should help Darren. She let go of Jonathan's arm and fell back to where Darren was.
I just fixed him up, you know, said Darren, smirking. Unless something happens, he's just going to have to wait a sprained ankle out.
So it's just a sprain? Jonathan asked, the worry apparent in his face. It was comforting to know that he would be able to move about if the situation became truly hazardous.
I'll have to get a better look at you. I'm not sure there's a cure for clumsiness.
That boy looked right at me, growled Crust, wiping the blood from his hands as he gazed into the distance.
I told you he was dangerous, said Buskerton.
That won't do. It simply won't do at all, grumbled Wallaby. Suppose he actually saw you.
He looked right at me, and now they're leaving in an awful hurry. Boy looks like a sissy. Hurt his foot on a box.
Wallaby huffed and kicked a dismembered hand into the water, watching a tiny cloud of red spread out below it.
You see, my dear Mr. Crust, this is exactly why our marquee starts with my name. I'm capable of, shall we say, a certain independent thought with regards to assumptions of motive.
What are you saying, Wallaby?
I am simply stating that, were I in your shoes, I would be able to properly assess the situation and tell whether he saw us or not.
Careful, old spot, Crust shot back. He didn't make eye contact with me, is all I was saying.
There. That, my friend, is what we call an answer.
Don't you get tired of your own voice, Mr. Wallaby?
Buskerton asked, checking the pulse on a corpse.
Never, sir, for never was there a more euphonic coupling of breath and flesh than the honey of my speech.
Buskerton and Crust returned comments, simply with blank stares. Wallaby coughed uncomfortably and continued.
I simply wanted to know two things, my dear friends. Did he see us specifically, and does he know what we look like?
Probably not.
Well, was that so hard, sir?
Said Wallaby.
No, suppose not.
As Jonathan and Isabel motored along at the head of their caravan, the city lights became sparser until there was virtually no sign of humanity at all. Isabel laid her head on the sill, and the dual streams of breath from her nostrils fogged the window ahead of her. She sat there quietly, watching the trees roll by over the racing grass. Brown wisps of hair danced across her sad eyes, which caught the purple light of the fading sun. How's your mother? Jonathan broke the silence like glass.
Oh, she's fine.
Been a while since we talked.
Winter soiree, 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, said Jonathan. She's not still trying to get you to marry me, is she?
No.
Isabel laughed half-heartedly.
I think she's given up on ever finding me a husband.
Isabel raised her head and gave Jonathan a weak smile. I think Christina is just holding out hope for one of those rich dilettantes you always meet on your overseas trips.
Don't kid yourself. I've met 100 knights in shining armor, and not one of them shines underneath.
Jonathan's eyes grew wide.
I didn't mean it like that.
Isabel plopped her head back down on the frame.
Why do you ask about Mom?
I was just thinking about how happy I was that I didn't have to tell her any bad news. Isabel's eyes awoke and flickered in Jonathan's direction. Awkward silence filled the car like water. The automobile hit a pothole and jarred the young woman upright as she bopped her head on the window. After a moment, she regained her bearings and shook off her expression of ennui.
What would you have told her if the worst had happened?
Isabel probed. Honestly?
What other answer would I want?
I would have told her whatever the main branch told me to tell her.
She never would have bought it. You have never been any good at lying to my mom.
Isabel scoffed. What was I supposed to say? Your daughter and I are in a secret wizarding club together and we travel the world supporting their clandestine ideals?
A lie wouldn't have worked.
That's what you think. Remember how I used to get a second cookie off of her all the time? Jonathan said, a self-impressed grin crossing his lips.
When you came over in the afternoons?
Yep.
When we were six?
Yep. One from Edna, and one from your mom.
Mom didn't buy a word of that, Jonathan. She just thought it was cute when you came around begging for scraps after lunch.
I had Christina wrapped around my little finger.
I don't know if you know this, Jonathan.
Isabel began.
I mean, I didn't know until she told me, but you twist your right foot a little when you lie.
I do not! The car sped up as Jonathan's foot twisted ever so slightly on the accelerator. He forced himself to slow down a bit, trying to nonchalantly let up without Isabel noticing. Her faint smile once again crossed her face. Can you tell me what you saw out there? Jonathan started in after a moment, killing off the smile he'd fought so hard to pry out of her.
I'm not sure I want to talk about it, to be honest. It was less than pleasant.
I know that much, and I'm really sorry. The car shuddered and rattled as it passed off the pavement and onto the gravel. Shards of rock pattered against the wheel wells like hail on a tin roof. A cool numbness passed into Jonathan's right hand, and he flexed his fingers around his tight grip on the wheel. Are we going to debrief when you get back?
Yeah, probably,
mumbled Isabel. Jonathan's eyes met Isabel's for a fleeting moment, but then darted back to the rough-hewn road. Do you want to tell me first? If you need support, it should be in front of me. Isabel bit her lip and her cheeks flushed. It's okay, Jonathan began.
No, I want to tell you, but the only real description that fits was...
Isabel sucked in a breath.
Well, was a hangman. It sounds stupid.
As stupid as our international wizarding club?
Fair enough.
What do you mean, a hangman?
He cursed me, Jonathan, with alchemy, I think. I couldn't really see well,
said Isabel.
What I could see was him breaking my contact's neck, and then he...
Jonathan's grip tightened on the steering wheel again. His teeth were tightly clenched, and he could feel a distinct pressure behind the bridge of his nose. He found himself terrified at the prospect that something could be worse than having his neck broken.
He broke Upton's neck, and then he ripped the life right out of him,
said Isabel. He killed him then?
I don't know. Well, I know Upton died. I think it was worse, though. I think the hangman fed off Upton's magic.
How do you know?
I don't want to talk about it. Just don't get caught. Don't let his chain touch you.
Jonathan glanced over at Isabel. Her stare remained fixed upon the tree line. What did he look like?
Perfect eyes, perfect skin.
Isabel's voice trailed off. She sat up, and her eyebrows knit together.
He looked a lot like Cog, actually.
Who is the Hangman, and what are his plans? What about Wallaby, Buskerton, and Crust? What powers do they wield? How will the Seekers find a way to combat such dangerous enemies? Find out next week on the Gearheart.
This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.
Today's podcast has been brought to you by Hargrave and Willem, attorneys at law. Have you recently been injured in an on-the-job accident? Have you endured call after call from creditors after your lair was blown up by a secret agent? Have you recently tried to murder a lone virgin after finishing off all of her friends only to find that she prevails in the end? Whatever your malintent, call Hargrave and Willem to get the compensation you deserve. For when the world turns on the villain, Hargrave and Willem. And by Clancy's of Northbrook, fine xenomorph breeders since 1811. Have you ever been assaulted by a facehugger only to have the pathetic spider thing fall off after only 3 days? Our facehuggers come from only the finest stock, straight from LV-426. Fall under the spell of one of our fleshy spiders, and we guarantee you'll be exploding in the chest in no time. There are many breeds to choose from. Dog alien, regular alien, pred alien, and queen. When you're tired of the service from the other drones and you want to feel like a queen, Clancy's of Northbrook.